I'm Stacey. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much for sharing your story. That was amazing. You spoke to my heart. It was a really, really good share. I'm really nervous right now, so I just have to say that out loud. And Don's not here, but I want to thank him for asking me to do this. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is 8/17/2000. My sponsor, Ann, is here, and I want to thank her for coming, and I also want to thank my partner, Julie, for being here. I'm very grateful that the two of you are here with me, walking me through this. Let's see. So I said sobriety date's 8/17/2000. I grew up in a very alcoholic home. My dad was an alcoholic. My mom did whatever my dad wanted her to do. I'm an alcoholic drug addict. My sister is an alcoholic drug addict. And we all ran amok together for a really long time. Growing up, one of the things that I like to say right now before I get into my story is that I have a good relationship with my dad today. So if I don't say that, I want you guys all to know that my dad is sober as he can be, and I have a great relationship with him. So it's very important that I say that. So as a kid, the things that I remember growing up in an alcoholic house is that my dad was a very abusive, verbally, physically, and mentally abusive person. And he was the one person that I hated the most growing up. Like, I disliked everything about my father. And I grew up to be exactly like him. I was his clone. So what would happen in our house is, and when I first started drinking is that on my dad during the week, he would go out and he would come home and he would kind of start some fights with my mom. But it wouldn't be too bad until a Saturday night would come or a Friday night would come. And my dad would come home, and he would go off, and he'd beat the crap out of my mom. And me and my sister would do everything that we could to make that not happen. So I remember being like probably fifth, sixth grade. And what I would do I would see my dad. He would drink, and he would become this intimidating person. But what would happen is people would do exactly what they wanted him to do. Like, if he said to do something, they would do it. So, and I liked that. There was something inside of me before I drank that it was like that lead by intimidation. Do what I say or there's going to be hell to pay. And so, and I didn't like that my mom would get beat up at all, because it's a horrible thing. You're a child and you watch your mom get her butt kicked all the time, and it's a terrible thing. And so what I would do is, and I don't know why I thought to do this. We grew up and we had this huge wet bar, this big alcohol bar, and it had tequila and vodka, whiskey, you name it. And we would have cups like this in the bar. I'm going to put this up here because my mouth's getting dry. So on Monday night, my dad would come home, my parents would be fighting, and I would go and I would pour a little alcohol in that cup, and I would take the cup and I would hide it under my bed. And then on Tuesday night, my dad would come home, he would have been drinking, my parents would fight, and I would pour more alcohol inside of that cup and I would hide it underneath my bed. And because I knew on Saturday or Sunday, and I don't know why I started doing that, I don't remember that part. Friday night, he would come home and go crazy, and I hated it. So what I would do is he would come home, he would start a fight, I would drink that, and I wouldn't remember anything that happened. And the other thing that would happen is that my parents would see their fifth or sixth grader completely drunk and wasted, and my dad wouldn't hurt my mom anymore. They would tend to me. And that was kind of like my coming into alcohol. I don't remember what it felt like the first time I drank. I probably don't remember the first couple years that I drank. I don't remember that feeling of, oh, God, this feels great. I remember being a little bit older and feeling stressful situations. And as soon as I picked up a drink, it didn't even have to hit my lips. My whole body would calm down. I love the effect that alcohol has on my body. I always did. It just made things a little bit easier for me. So my parents, they all this fighting would happen, and so I would drink so my mom wouldn't get beat up, and drink so I wouldn't remember my mom getting beat up. But what I would know was, is that me and my sister would always defend my mom. We would always go in and we would try to help her. And in the process of that, we would get beat up. So I would know that it happened the next day because I would physically felt like something really bad happened to me. And my life was just like that for years. And it kind of just, after a while, the older that I got, I noticed that, because I'm a nice person. In general, I'm a really, really nice person. But growing up, I didn't know how to get what I wanted or the things that I needed without intimidating and scaring the shit out of people. Like, so naturally, I don't like to lead by intimidation, but I don't know how to get what I want, so I drink, so I intimidate you, and you do exactly what I want you to do. And that's what my dad did. And so, my drinking and drugs is a big part of my story, and I'm not really going to talk about that too much, but really started like fifth or sixth grade. And by the time I was in high school, I was into a lot of other things outside of alcohol, and my parents decided, I remember one day I was in class, and there used to be this group of kids that used to meet in this library at the school, and there was like a glass room inside of the library, and everybody thought, oh, those are the dysfunctional kids, they're all meeting in this room. And it would happen twice a month. This group of kids would be in the little glass room in the library, and they would meet with this, I remember, really handsome, tall, tall man. And one day I got a call slip in class. Now, I'm strung out. I am doing, I call it powdered alcohol, and I am drinking as much as I possibly can now. And I get a call slip, and it's to go to that room. And I'm wondering, I wonder if those screwed up kids are in there. And those screwed up kids were in that room, and this man, he's a really tall man, and he says, and my sister had already graduated high school, and my sister came walking out from around the corner. And my sister had called the school, had gone to the school as like an intervention, not telling my parents that she was doing this because she was afraid for my safety because I was so screwed up. I think I was about 15 or 16 years old, and that guy in that room with all those screwed up kids, those kids were the first people I related with. Like, they looked so messed up. They didn't look put together. They were like the outcasts. I always had whatever I wanted. I had new clothes, new cars. We grew up in a huge house. Like, we had all the stuff. But my feelings, I related with those kids in that room like nobody I've ever related before in my life. And he ended up calling my parents, and my parents put me in this, I'm 15 or 16 years old, and my parents put me in this, my first rehab. And I remember I was sitting in this group, and they have these family groups, and I always knew that I was gay. Always. I always tried not to be gay. Like, I did everything that I possibly could not to be my authentic self. Because I was so afraid of what my family would think. And we're in this family group, and I'm being honest with my family about the drugs that I use and the alcohol that I drink. And I look at my dad and I look at my mom and I say, I'm gay. And my dad says, we've got to get her out of here. This place is making her a lesbian. And but the look in his face, he was so disgusted that I thought, okay, what do I do now? Now, I didn't know And I'm not an alcoholic because I tried to be straight and I really wasn't a lesbian. I'm an alcoholic because I like the effects that alcohol and drugs do on my body, period. And I don't believe that I'm an alcoholic because I grew up in a dysfunctional household. I made really bad choices that led to my alcoholism. And I kept making those choices that every time my body would say, don't do it, don't do it, I do it. So I remember sitting in that room with my parents, and my dad was, like, freaking out. He's like, you cannot be a lesbian. You cannot. And it was like that image management. And so I just dropped it. I just dropped it, and I just didn't say anything about it. And I stayed sober for a little bit over a year, and I relapsed again. And one of the things that I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 15 or 16 years old, and I came in and out of the rooms until I was 25 years old. And that's when I got sober this last time. I just forgot what I was going to say. I hate it when that happens. I did forget what I was going to say. Oh, I came in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But the thing was, is that I never turned my will and my life over to a power greater than myself, ever. Like, okay, so part of my upbringing is my dad is an atheist or an agnostic. My mom grew up with a little bit of religion in her life. My dad's parents were Catholics, and they were awful people. And so my only thought of religion was these really bad people. Now, Catholics aren't awful. I know a lot of really great Catholics. But being that age, the only thing that I knew about religious people was that they were really, really bad. And so when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and we don't have the steps up, and I saw the steps and I saw God, I went into panic. I was so afraid. I thought, how in the hell am I going to turn my will and my life over to the care of something that these people, there's only two people in my life that I know are all about this God, Jesus thing, and they're not good people at all. So from the age of 15 to 25, I came in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I couldn't do those first three steps. I could not. I could say that I was powerless over alcohol. Nobody can tell me that my life was unmanageable. I really thought I had my shit in a bag, like everything was great. And I couldn't get to step three because I didn't believe that this person, this God person, could do anything, restore any sanity in my life because I didn't think it was a good person. So after that first rehab, stayed sober for a while, and then relapsed. And it was interesting because I would hear in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that your disease is doing push-ups. It's waiting for you. And I didn't believe that. And I remember the first time that I drank after I had been sober for almost a year, it was like I had never put a sip of alcohol down. I was off and running within 2 days. I drank just as alcoholically as I did the last time that I drank. And I spent the next, 4 or 5 years going to jail, getting DUIs, going to jail for other outside issue things. And, my family would tell me, they would say, you know, Stacy, last night you were a mess. And I wouldn't remember some of the things that I would do. And then people would come to me and they would say, you punched somebody in the face last night. And I'm like, no, I didn't. And then I would have a friend call me, say, you know what? I don't want to be your friend anymore. You're a really bad person. And it would be somebody that I really cared about, a friend that I had physically annihilated the night before. And I didn't remember those things. And then I would get the guilt and the shame. And I would say, my family would call and they would talk to me and they would say, you know, you really might want to think about quitting drinking again. And I would talk to them on the phone and I would say, you know what, I'm going to do that. I'm going to quit drinking again. And I really believed that every single time that they would say to me, or anybody that meaned anything to me, would say to me, this is a really bad idea for you to drink alcohol. I believed them. And in my heart of hearts, when I would tell them, I am not going to drink again, I was never lying to them. I really intended on not drinking again. Like, I really thought that if I could just do something differently, and then a couple days would go by, and then I would wake up, and I would be hungover, and I would be so disappointed in myself. And it was that powerless peace. And I remember thinking, like, why can't I get this? Like, I can't. And I did that for 9 years, in and out, in and out. And my very first sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I was 15, I picked her to be my sponsor because she had a really cool car, and people were intimidated by her, and she wasn't involved in the steps, but she was really popular, and she seemed to hang out with a cool group of people. So that's what I thought I was supposed to do. And then I would see people that I went through rehab with when I was a kid that had stayed sober, and they kind of hung out with the boring people, the people that were cleaning up after the meeting, the people that were raising their hands to be a service, and they seemed really happy. And I was the one going in and out, in and out, in and out. And so I'm 23, 24. I'm trying to figure out my life. I decide that I'm going to now, well, maybe 22. I'm going to come out to my family. And it's just going to be that way. And I'm going to talk to them about it. And so I talked to my mom and I talked to my dad, and they are not having it at all. I am not going to be gay. My sister doesn't want me to be gay. Nobody's going to be, you are not gay. And so, so I'm not going to be gay. And so I decided to make an honest attempt at not being gay. And I ended up in a relationship with my best friend. And he was a great guy. That poor thing. I was a horrible partner. But if I can drink and if I can use, I can put on a show for anybody. It doesn't matter. I lose, as soon as I drink, as soon as I use, I lose all track of things that are important to me. And I would really try to show up for him. And he ended up getting sick. Yeah, with cancer and dying. And but what I learned in that experience was I never thought that I could show up for another human being in that capacity. Like, I'm 24 years old. I am changing a human, I'm changing a man's diaper. I am giving him shots. I'm sleeping at the hospital. I'm doing all of these things. But I was so pissed that I was doing it, because I would have gone through that whole experience with him as a friend, but not in the capacity that I went through as his lover. One of the hardest things for me in my sobriety it's not hard for me now, because I feel like I've made my amends to him, even though he is gone, is that I feel like I robbed him of the experience that he deserved with somebody, because I was a horrible girlfriend. Horrible, horrible, horrible. And then when we found out he had cancer, I decided to marry him, and I went through all the motions, and I did all of those things. And then when he died, I swore to myself that I would never be dishonest with who I was again. It didn't mean that I quit drinking, because I was going through all of this stuff. And my drinking after he died, it was just a rapid progression. Like, I went crazy. Within a few months, I got a couple more DUIs. I wiped out the neighbor's cars. What time is it? Okay. I wiped out the neighbor's cars. There's no clocks. I want to get sober. I wiped out the neighbor's cars. My family, thank you. My family was one of the things that my mom said to me. She goes, I'm so afraid when you're gone and the phone rings, I am afraid that it's a phone call saying that you're dead every time the phone rings. Because I moved in with my mom after he died. So I had a plan to get sober. I had gone to, my mom went to Germany. I had gotten another DUI. I had already gone to AA and where my mom lived. And but I got this DUI. As soon as they didn't impound the car, I talked him out of impounding the car. The man that I was with, Jason, that I married, that died, his mom picked me up from jail, took me back to my mom's car. They left all the alcohol in my mom's car, the police did. And as soon as I got in the car, I reached behind me. There was a fifth of Jack Daniels. I drank as much as I possibly could, and I drove home. So when I look back on it today and I think of, like, the powerlessness and the unmanageability in my life, like, it was always there, and I just wouldn't admit that piece. So I'm at home. I'm at my mom's house. She's in Germany, and I've hit the depths. And so I call Alcoholics Anonymous, and they ask me, they're like, have you been drinking? And I say, no, which I was hammered. But I had heard, because my mom, well, I had been in Alcoholics Anonymous, but a really good friend of my mom was in the program. Her name is Mary. And but I had heard that they'll send people to you, and I didn't want anybody to come. And they said, well, I want you to go. The lady on the phone that I talked to says, I want you to go to this address, and there's a meeting. Since you haven't been drinking, you can get yourself there. And I showed up, and it's a place called the Ashland Home. And I was wasted. And it's a women's recovery home. I didn't know. I thought I was going to, like, a church or something where they held meetings. I pull up into a neighborhood, and I open it, knock on the door. And the lady that opened up the door was my first sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous this time. And I was talking to her, and she's like, God, you're really drunk right now. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she's like, well, this is a women's recovery home. Maybe we can see what we can do about getting you in here. And I'm like, no, I'm not interested in that. But I am interested in going to the meeting. And she's like, we're going to make sure we get you home. And I said, oh, no, I'll drive myself home. And so she gave me her number. And this other girl, Jennifer, gave me her number. And that very first person, her name's Julie, I wanted to ask her to be my sponsor, but I was so afraid. Like, I knew at that point, if I didn't quit drinking, I was going to die. Like, it was right there. It was really getting sketchy for me. And so my mom came home, and I thought, okay, I'm going to go out one more time, and I'm going to come home. I'm going to be wasted. I'm going to appease my mom, and drunk, I'm going to call Julie, and I'm going to ask her to be my sponsor, because that's the only time I have the nerve to do this. And that plan worked, and I never picked up a drink after that. And so I asked this Julie to be my sponsor, and she's very involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she introduced me to my current sponsor, Ann. And Julie was my sponsor for the first 3 years of my sobriety, and Ann has been my sponsor for 10 years. Almost 10 years. I'm giving myself a little more time. So I didn't know what was going to happen this time. And she, one of the questions that Julie asked me when I got sober, she said, Stacy, are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? I had no idea what that meant. I was sitting in a restaurant with her. She was looking at me, and she's like, are you willing to go to any lengths? And I thought, it like clicked into my head. I go, okay, Stacy, you have lied. And I'm talking to myself in my head. She's staring at me, waiting for a response. And I thought, you have lied about everything in your life up to this point, for the most part, to everybody you've ever talked to try to make friends. I didn't know what the question entailed. And I asked her, I just looked at her, I go, can I think about it for like 5 or 10 minutes? And I went outside, I smoked a cigarette, and she's like, yeah, no problem. I went outside and I smoked a cigarette, and I thought, okay, she seems really serious about this. And so I sat down, I smoked a cigarette. After I smoked a cigarette, I came back in, and I thought, what the hell do you have to lose? Like, what you're doing is not working. And I told her that I was willing to go to any lengths to stay sober. And what happened after that is my life changed. She dove me into the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I went over my first step with her, she had me read Bill's story, the doctor's opinion in Bill's story, and had me read the first step one in the 12 and 12. I love the big book. I understand the 12 and 12 just a little bit more. It speaks a little deeper for me. And one of the things in there, it talks about, and it even says it like when it summarizes the steps in the 12 and 12, it talks about admitting complete defeat over alcohol. And when I read that, at that moment, I was able to admit complete defeat over alcohol. And then when I got to step two, somebody said, we get to be restored to sanity in that soundness of mind. Okay, my mind never goes quiet. Like drinking, newly sober, I am crazy. So if I can just have like 30 minutes a day of quietness, I'm trying step two, like I'm doing it. Because I would just be constantly trying to keep up with all the stories and all the things that I would say in my head. And then what would happen was is that I did that step two, and I did get soundness of mind. And today, sometimes I have it for a few hours a day. It's better than not having it at all. And then I got to the whole higher power part. And she had me do this worksheet, and I had to ask 5 people that I admired what their higher power was. And one of the people that I asked was my current sponsor, Anne. And she looks at me and she goes, well, I have no idea. And I was like, okay. And she goes, Stacy, it just is. It doesn't have to look like anything. You just have to believe that it is. And that worked for me. Because I would spend so much time trying to make, like I thought it had to look like the picture of Jesus. And I could never get there. Ever. And so today, I have no clue what my higher power is. This is what I know. I have a lot of really good shit in my life. I have a partner that I love. She has 2 kids that I love. I have a sponsor that has always had my best interest. I have a great relationship with my family. I have all of these things. And it's, it talks about no human power can relieve us from our alcoholism. That thing that I don't know what it is takes care of me every single day. And I wouldn't have any of this if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. None of it. One of my favorite sayings in the big book is that it says, our very lives depend on the constant thought of others. The first 25 years of my life, I did nothing but think of myself. Today, I do the best that I can and try to put other people in front of me, and things seem to work out. When the meeting first started, there was no newcomers. I don't know if there's any newcomers here now. I was a little bit intimidated. But if there are, because there's more people here now, if there are newcomers, I hope that you find the home in Alcoholics Anonymous that I found. I wouldn't trade what I have for anything. My life, I have bad days. Life still happens and shitty things still happen all the time around me. But my life is better than I ever thought it would be. And the only reason why it's that way, it's because I did the 12 steps and then I just try to think of other people. So thanks again for letting me share. And if you're new, just give this thing a shot because it's really worth it. Thank you. Hi, I'm Stacey. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much for sharing your story. That was amazing. You spoke to my heart. It was a really, really good share. I'm really nervous right now, so I just have to say that out loud. And Don's not here, but I want to thank him for asking me to do this. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is 8/17/2000. My sponsor, Ann, is here, and I want to thank her for coming. I also want to thank my partner, Julie, for being here. I'm very grateful that the two of you are here with me, walking me through this. Let's see. So I said sobriety date's 8/17/2000. I grew up in a very alcoholic home. My dad was an alcoholic. My mom did whatever my dad wanted her to do. I'm an alcoholic drug addict. My sister is an alcoholic drug addict, and we all ran amok together for a really long time. Growing up, one of the things that I like to say right now before I get into my story is that I have a good relationship with my dad today. So if I don't say that, I want you guys all to know that my dad is sober as he can be, and I have a great relationship with him. So it's very important that I say that. So as a kid, the things that I remember growing up in an alcoholic house is that my dad was a very, he was a very abusive, verbally, physically, and mentally abusive person. And, he was the one person that I hated the most growing up. Like, I disliked everything about my father, and I grew up to be exactly like him. I was his clone. So what would happen in our house is, and when I first started drinking was, is that on my dad during the week, he would go out and he would come home and he would kind of start some fights with my mom. But it wouldn't be too bad until a Saturday night would come or a Friday night would come. And my dad would come home and he would go off and he'd beat the crap out of my mom. And me and my sister would do everything that we could to make that not happen. So I remember being like probably fifth, sixth grade, and what I would do was I would see my dad. He would drink, and he would become this intimidating person. But what would happen is people would do exactly what they wanted him to do. Like if he said to do something, they would do it. So, and I liked that. There was something inside of me before I drank that. It was like that lead by intimidation. Do what I say or there's going to be hell to pay. And so, and I didn't like that my mom would get beat up at all because it's a horrible thing. You're a child and you watch your mom get her butt kicked all the time and it's a terrible thing. And so what I would do is, and I don't know why I thought to do this. We grew up and we had this huge wet bar, this big alcohol bar, and it had tequila, vodka, whiskey, you name it. And we would have cups like this in the bar. I'm going to put this up here because my mouth's getting dry. And so on Monday night, my dad would come home. My parents would be fighting. And I would go and I would pour a little alcohol in that cup. And I would take the cup and I would hide it under my bed. And then on Tuesday night, my dad would come home. He would have been drinking. My parents would fight. And I would pour more alcohol inside of that cup, and I would hide it underneath my bed. And because I knew on Saturday or Sunday, and I don't, like I said, I don't know why I started doing that. I don't remember that part. Friday or Saturday night, he would come home and go crazy, and I hated it. So what I would do is he would come home, he would start a fight, I would drink that, and I wouldn't remember anything that happened. And the other thing that would happen is that my parents would see their fifth or sixth grader completely drunk and wasted, and my dad wouldn't hurt my mom anymore. They would tend to me. And that was kind of like my coming into alcohol. I don't remember what it felt like the first time I drank. I probably don't remember the first couple years that I drank. I don't remember that feeling of, oh, God, this feels great. I remember being a little bit older and feeling stressful situations. And as soon as I picked up a drink, it didn't even have to hit my lips. I would just, my whole body would calm down. I love the effect that alcohol has on my body. I always did. It just made things a little bit easier for me. So my parents, they all this fighting would happen, and so I would drink so my mom wouldn't get beat up, and drink so I wouldn't remember my mom getting beat up. But what I would know was, is that me and my sister would always defend my mom. We would always go in and we would try to help her. And in the process of that, we would get beat up. So I would know that it happened the next day because I would physically felt like something really bad happened to me. And my life was just like that for years. And it kind of just, after a while, the older that I got, I noticed that, because I'm a nice person. In general, I'm a really, really nice person. But growing up, I didn't know how to get what I wanted or the things that I needed without intimidating and scaring the shit out of people. Like, so naturally, I don't like to lead by intimidation, but I don't know how to get what I want, so I drink, so I intimidate you, and you do exactly what I want you to do. And that's what my dad did. And so, my drinking and drugs is a big part of my story, and I'm not really going to talk about that too much, but really started like fifth or sixth grade. And by the time I was in high school, I was into a lot of other things outside of alcohol, and my parents decided, I remember one day I was in class, and there used to be this group of kids that used to meet in this library at the school, and there was like a glass room inside of the library, and everybody thought, oh, those are the dysfunctional kids, they're all meeting in this room. And it would happen twice a month. This group of kids would be in the little glass room in the library, and they would meet with this, I remember, really handsome, tall, tall man. And one day I got a call slip in class. Now, I'm strung out. I am doing, I call it powdered alcohol, and I am drinking as much as I possibly can now. And I get a call slip, and it's to go to that room. And I'm wondering, I wonder if those screwed up kids are in there. And those screwed up kids were in that room, and this man, he's a really tall man, and he says, and my sister had already graduated high school, and my sister came walking out from around the corner, and my sister had called the school, had gone to the school as like an intervention, not telling my parents that she was doing this, because she was afraid for my safety, because I was so screwed up. I think I was about 15 or 16 years old, and that guy in that room with all those screwed up kids, those kids were the first people I related with. Like, they looked so messed up. They didn't look put together. They were like the outcasts. I always had whatever I wanted. I had new clothes, new cars. We grew up in a huge house. Like, we had all the stuff. But my feelings, I related with those kids in that room like nobody I've ever related before in my life. And he ended up calling my parents, and my parents put me in this, I'm 15 or 16 years old, and my parents put me in this, my first rehab. And I remember I was sitting in this group, and they have these family groups, and I always knew that I was gay. Always. I always tried not to be gay. Like, I did everything that I possibly could not to be my authentic self. Because I was so afraid of what my family would think. And we're in this family group, and I'm being honest with my family about the drugs that I use and the alcohol that I drink. And I look at my dad and I look at my mom and I say, I'm gay. And my dad says, we've got to get her out of here. This place is making her a lesbian. And but the look in his face, he was so disgusted that I thought, okay, what do I do now? Now, I didn't know, and I'm not an alcoholic because I tried to be straight and I really wasn't a lesbian. I'm an alcoholic because I like the effects that alcohol and drugs do on my body, period. And I don't believe that I'm an alcoholic because I grew up in a dysfunctional household. I made really bad choices that led to my alcoholism. And I kept making those choices that every time my body would say, don't do it, don't do it, I do it. So I remember sitting in that room with my parents, and my dad was like freaking out. He's like, you cannot be a lesbian. You cannot. And it was like that image management. And so I just dropped it. I just dropped it, and I just didn't say anything about it. And I stayed sober for a little bit over a year, and I relapsed again. And one of the things that I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 15 or 16 years old, and I came in and out of the rooms until I was 25 years old. And that's when I got sober this last time. I just forgot what I was going to say. I hate it when that happens. I did forget what I was going to say. Oh, I came in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But the thing was, is that I never turned my will in my life over to a power greater than myself, ever. Like, okay, so part of my upbringing is my dad is an atheist or an agnostic. My mom grew up with a little bit of religion in her life. My dad's parents were Catholics, and they were awful people. And so my only thought of religion was these really bad people. Now, Catholics aren't awful. I know a lot of really great Catholics. But being that age, the only thing that I knew about religious people was that they were really, really bad. And so when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and we don't have the steps up, and I saw the steps and I saw God, I went into panic. I was so afraid. I thought, how in the hell am I going to turn my will and my life over to the care of something that these people, there's only two people in my life that I know are all about this God, Jesus thing, and they're not good people at all. So from the age of 15 to 25, I came in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I couldn't do those first three steps. I could not. I could say that I was powerless over alcohol. Nobody can tell me that my life was unmanageable. I really thought I had my shit in a bag, like everything was great. And I couldn't get to step three because I didn't believe that this person, this God person, could do anything, restore any sanity in my life because I didn't think it was a good person. So after that first rehab, stayed sober for a while, and then relapsed. And it was interesting because I would hear in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that your disease is doing push-ups. It's waiting for you. And I didn't believe that. And I remember the first time that I drank after I had been sober for almost a year, it was like I had never put a sip of alcohol down. I was off and running within 2 days. I drank just as alcoholically as I did the last time that I drank. And I spent the next, 4 or 5 years going to jail, getting DUIs, going to jail for other outside issue things. And, my family would tell me, they would say, you know, Stacy, last night you were a mess. And I wouldn't remember some of the things that I would do. And then people would come to me and they would say, you punched somebody in the face last night. And I'm like, no, I didn't. And then I would have a friend call me, say, you know what, I don't want to be your friend anymore. You're a really bad person. And it would be somebody that I really cared about, a friend that I had physically annihilated the night. And I didn't remember those things. And then I would get the guilt and the shame. And I would say, my family would call and they would talk to me and they would say, you know, you really might want to think about quitting drinking again. And I would talk to them on the phone and I would say, you know what, I'm going to do that. I'm going to quit drinking again. And I really believed that every single time that they would say to me, or anybody that meant anything to me, would say to me, this is a really bad idea for you to drink alcohol. I believed them, and in my heart of hearts, when I would tell them, I am not going to drink again, I was never lying to them. I really intended on not drinking again. Like, I really thought that if I could just do something differently, and then a couple days would go by, and then I would wake up, and I would be hungover, and I would be so disappointed in myself. And it was that powerless peace. And I remember thinking, like, why can't I get this? Like, I can't. And I did that for 9 years, in and out, in and out. And my very first sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I was 15, I picked her to be my sponsor because she had a really cool car, and people were intimidated by her. And she wasn't involved in the steps, but she was really popular and she seemed to hang out with a cool group of people. So that's what I thought I was supposed to do. And then I would see people that I went through rehab with when I was a kid that had stayed sober, and they kind of hung out with the boring people, the people that were cleaning up after the meeting, the people that were, raising their hands to be a service, and they seemed really happy. And I was the one going in and out, in and out, in and out. And so I'm 23, 24. I'm trying to figure out my life. I decide that I'm going to now, well, maybe 22. I'm going to come out to my family. And it's just going to be that way. And I'm going to talk to them about it. And so I talked to my mom and I talked to my dad, and they are not having it at all. I am not going to be gay. My sister doesn't want me to be gay. Nobody's going to be, you are not gay. And so, so I'm not going to be gay. And so I decided to make an honest attempt at not being gay. And I ended up in a relationship with my best friend. And he was a great guy. That poor thing. I was a horrible partner. But if I can drink and if I can use, I can put on a show for anybody. It doesn't matter. I lose, as soon as I drink, as soon as I use, I lose all track of things that are important to me. And I would really try to show up for him. And he ended up getting sick. Yeah, with cancer and dying. And but what I learned in that experience was I never thought that I could show up for another human being in that capacity. Like, I'm 23 years old. 24 years old. I'm changing a man's diaper. I am giving him shots. I'm sleeping at the hospital. I'm doing all of these things. But I was so pissed that I was doing it, because I would have gone through that whole experience with him as a friend, but not in the capacity that I went through as his lover. One of the hardest things for me in my sobriety it's not hard for me now because I feel like I've made my amends to him even though he is gone, is that I feel like I robbed him of the experience that he deserved with somebody, because I was a horrible girlfriend. Horrible, horrible, horrible. And then when we found out he had cancer, I decided to marry him, and I went through all the motions and I did all of those things. And then when he died, I swore to myself that I would never be dishonest with who I was again. It didn't mean that I quit drinking, because I was going through all of this stuff, and my drinking after he died, it was just a rapid progression. Like, I went crazy. Within a few months, I got a couple more DUIs. I wiped out the neighbor's cars. What time is it? Okay. I wiped out the neighbor's cars. There's no clocks. I want to get sober. I wiped out the neighbor's cars. My family, thank you. My family was, one of the things that my mom said to me, she goes, I'm so afraid when you're gone and the phone rings, I am afraid that it's a phone call saying that you're dead every time the phone rings. Because I moved in with my mom after he died. So I had a plan to get sober. I had gone to, my mom went to Germany. I had gotten another DUI. I had already gone to AA and where my mom lived. And but I got this DUI. As soon as they didn't impound the car. I talked him out of impounding the car. The man that I was with, Jason, that I married, that died, his mom picked me up from jail, took me back to my mom's car. They left all the alcohol in my mom's car, the police did. And as soon as I got in the car, I reached behind me. There was a fifth of Jack Daniels. I drank as much as I possibly could, and I drove home. So when I look back on it today and I think of, like, the powerlessness and the unmanageability in my life, like, it was always there, and I just wouldn't admit that piece. So I'm at home. I'm at my mom's house. She's in Germany, and I've hit the depths. And so I call Alcoholics Anonymous, and they ask me, they're like, have you been drinking? And I say, no, which I was hammered. But I had heard, because my mom, well, I had been in Alcoholics Anonymous, but a really good friend of my mom was in the program. Her name is Mary. And but I had heard that they'll send people to you, and I didn't want anybody to come. And they said, well, I want you to go. The lady on the phone that I talked to says, I want you to go to this address, and there's a meeting. Since you haven't been drinking, you can get yourself there. And I showed up, and it's a place called the Ashland Home. And I was wasted. And it's a women's recovery home. I didn't know. I thought I was going to, like, a church or something where they held meetings. I pull up into a neighborhood, and I open it, knock on the door. And the lady that opened up the door was my first sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous this time. And I was talking to her, and she's like, God, you're really drunk right now. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she's like, well, this is a women's recovery home. Maybe we can see what we can do about getting you in here. And I'm like, no, I'm not interested in that. But I am interested in going to the meeting. And she's like, we're going to make sure we get you home. And I said, oh, no, I'll drive myself home. And so she gave me her number. And this other girl, Jennifer, gave me her number. And that very first person, her name's Julie, I wanted to ask her to be my sponsor, but I was so afraid. Like, I knew at that point, if I didn't quit drinking, I was going to die. Like, it was right there. It was really getting sketchy for me. And so my mom came home, and I thought, okay, I'm going to go out one more time, and I'm going to come home. I'm going to be wasted. I'm going to appease my mom, and drunk, I'm going to call Julie, and I'm going to ask her to be my sponsor, because that's the only time I have the nerve to do this. And that plan worked, and I never picked up a drink after that. And so I asked this Julie to be my sponsor, and she's very involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she introduced me to my current sponsor, Ann. And Julie was my sponsor for the first 3 years of my sobriety, and Ann has been my sponsor for 10 years. Almost 10 years. I'm giving myself a little more time. So I didn't know what was going to happen this time. And she, one of the questions that Julie asked me when I got sober, she said, Stacy, are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? I had no idea what that meant. I was sitting in a restaurant with her. She was looking at me, and she's like, are you willing to go to any lengths? And I thought, it like clicked into my head. I go, okay, Stacy, you have lied. And I'm talking to myself in my head. She's staring at me, waiting for a response. And I thought, you have lied about everything in your life up to this point, for the most part, to everybody you've ever talked to try to make friends. I didn't know what the question entailed. And I asked her, I just looked at her. I go, can I think about it for like 5 or 10 minutes? And I went outside. I smoked a cigarette. And she's like, yeah, no problem. I went outside and I smoked a cigarette. And I thought, okay, she seems really serious about this. And so I sat down. I smoked a cigarette. After I smoked a cigarette, I came back in. And I thought, what the hell do you have to lose? Like, what you're doing is not working. And I told her that I was. I was willing to go to any lengths to stay sober. And what happened after that is my life changed. She dove me into the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I went over my first step with her, she had me read Bill's story, the doctor's opinion in Bill's story, and had me read the first step one in the 12 and 12. I love the big book. I understand the 12 and 12 just a little bit more. It speaks a little deeper for me. And one of the things in there, it talks about, and it even says it like when it summarizes the steps in the 12 and 12, it talks about admitting complete defeat over alcohol. And when I read that, at that moment, I was able to admit complete defeat over alcohol. And then when I got to step two, somebody said, we get to be restored to sanity in that soundness of mind. Okay, my mind never goes quiet. Like drinking, newly sober, I am crazy. So if I can just have like 30 minutes a day of quietness, I'm trying step two. Like I'm doing it. Because I would just be constantly trying to keep up with all the stories and all the things that I would say in my head. And then what was happened was is that I did that step two, and I did get soundness of mind. And today, sometimes I have it for a few hours a day. It's better than not having it at all. And then I got to the whole higher power part. And she had me do this worksheet, and I had to ask 5 people that I admired what their higher power was. And one of the people that I asked was my current sponsor, Ann. And she looks at me and she goes, well, I have no idea. And I was like, okay. And she goes, Stacy, it just is. It doesn't have to look like anything. You just have to believe that it is. And that worked for me. Because I would spend so much time trying to make, like I thought it had to look like the picture of Jesus. And I could never get there. Ever. And so today, I have no clue what my higher power is. This is what I know. I have a lot of really good shit in my life. I have a partner that I love. She has 2 kids that I love. I have a sponsor that has always had my best interest. I have a great relationship with my family. I have all of these things. And it's, you know, it talks about no human power can relieve us from our alcoholism. That thing that I don't know what it is takes care of me every single day. And I wouldn't have any of this if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. None of it. One of my favorite sayings in the big book is that it says our very lives depend on the constant thought of others. The first 25 years of my life, I did nothing but think of myself. Today, I do the best that I can and try to put other people in front of me, and things seem to work out. When the meeting first started, there was no newcomers. I don't know if there's any newcomers here now. I was a little bit intimidated. But if there are, because there's more people here now, if there are newcomers, I hope that you find the home in Alcoholics Anonymous that I found. I wouldn't trade what I have for anything. My life, I mean, I have bad days. Life still happens and shitty things still happen all the time around me. But my life is better than I ever thought it would be. And the only reason why it's that way, it's because I did the 12 steps and then I just try to think of other people. So thanks again for letting me share. And if you're new, just give this thing a shot because it's really worth it. Thank you.